Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, January the 9th, 2015. I am your host, Allison Colin. I am joined here today by my co-host, Jackie McIntosh.
Hello.
And Cynthia Ganatra.
Hello.
And our control room tech trainee, Amir Ali.
Happy to be here.
Alyssa is away today. Welcome, everyone. Happy New Year. It's been a while since I've been in the station, and it's good to be back. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at coopradio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. Well, I always like to start off the new year by trying to empower our listeners into either starting their activism for animals in the new year or continuing their activism for animals and giving you tools and advice to be able to do so. One effective method of animal activism that can easily be done from your own home is writing letters to the editor to publications that run stories about animal issues in the community. The possibilities for this type of activism to be spread far and wide are virtually endless, especially via the use of the internet as media these days. So for our first interview today, we'll have author and activist Robin Lamont on the show, who will be sharing with us some tips and advice for effective letter writing techniques for the animals. And she'll be sharing with us an example of a letter she wrote to oppose a local deer cull in her area. And speaking of deer culls, our first interview dovetails nicely into our feature interview, which is with Kelly Carson. She is the spokesperson for a grassroots organization called Deer Safe Victoria, as well as a director for the BC Deer Protection Society. You may have seen in the news lately that 25 deer who reside in the community of Oak Bay, BC on Vancouver Island are set to be killed this month as part of the deer management strategy of the Capital Regional District, which covers the municipality of Oak Bay. Deer Safe was created to give a voice for the voiceless and to provide a discourse for alternative non-lethal methods. Kelly will be here today to give us the whole story about the issue. That interview is coming up in about 30 minutes. So please do stay tuned.
All right. And on last week's show, for those of you that tuned in, we kind of looked back on the past year with Animal Voices and just reflected on some of our highlights of the year. So this show, it makes sense to look forward and talk about goals and resolutions. Cynthia, what are some of your goals for the year?
Yeah, so my goals are to they're kind of projects I have, and one of them is to engage more with the yoga community. I used to be part of the yoga community, and I kind of left based on frustrations because there weren't that many vegans, and so I want to kind of go back, and I'm working on a leaflet that I'd like to share that connects yoga and veganism. And I also want to kind of hold meditations for animals and animals hurt in different industries at my home. So mine is kind of more to get in touch with myself and spirit. But at the same time, I want to still be really involved in demos. Last year, I had a really busy job, so I wasn't able to get out more. So I just want to be more active, but make sure I don't get burnt out. So kind of got a little burnt out last year, to be honest. So yeah. Allison, what are your goals?
Well, I have been thinking about my New Year's resolutions for 2015, as I always do. And one thing that I really want to get more into is what I call food activism. I remember I did an interview about this with Issa Chandra Moskovitz on the show several years ago. If people are interested more into learning what I mean by that, you can check it out on our website, animalvoices.org. And what I mean by that is reaching out to people on the vegan lifestyle by giving them delicious food to eat, because I really like cooking for people. And I know I had you guys all over at Christmas time and we celebrated with lots of good food, but you're already the converted, right? So not that there's anything wrong with that, but really what I would like to do more of is inviting people into my home and showing them what amazing plant-based, no animal products whatsoever food that you can make. There's one person who I've been mentoring lately who has recently gone vegan because of me. Oh. And we were just talking recently, a few weeks ago, about cheese. He's like, yeah, I don't even miss the dairy anymore. I'm like, okay, well, because, you know, cheese is everyone's best friend usually when they're a dairy eater. and then I was saying to him, well, have you ever had plant-based cheeses, like vegan cheeses? And he's like, oh, no, well, what are there? And I said, well, you know, it's actually one of my hobbies to make vegan cheese. And you can have this, you can have that. And What are some of your favorite kinds? Because I told him I would make him a birthday dinner because his birthday was recent. And I said, I'll make you some cheese. So definitely going to make him some cheese there. And sort of just thinking, like, when people see what, for example, what kind of amazing vegan cheeses that you can eat and that you're not missing out whatsoever, then I think that just makes it just sort of one step easier into delving into that lifestyle and transitioning. So that's personally what one of the things that I want to work on. I have a few other ones too.
Yeah, and I was hoping to kind of work on building more community, trying to help build more community within the animal liberation, animal rights movement, as well as getting more people active and using their voices, and also just working more on organizing with different groups and trying to, just build more unity, hopefully.
Jackie, how have you seen that in the last year? To me personally, it seems like that community is really growing and that we're really on the cusp of something amazing. Like, we have a big protest planned for this week, for example, that a lot of people are going to. But I know you're very involved with that. So mm-hmm. How have you seen that develop?
Yeah, definitely in the past 6 months, there's been a huge improvement, I would say, in, as far as, you know, the amount of people getting involved, new people getting involved, and also just like, more... It seems like we have more unity within the different groups, but also I think that we can still grow on that, and we need to keep talking to people and keep the movement going. Otherwise, it could stagnate very easily. And what about you, Amir? Do you have any goals for the year?
Yeah, I think for me, whenever I'm on the show, I'm sort of astounded by you guys and your knowledge on the movement and animal rights in general. So I'd like to get up to that level. Obviously, it's not going to happen, overnight, but... maybe just taking part in more events and, doing some more research personally to get my knowledge bank up to the level of you guys and just coming back to the show more, because I learn a lot from you guys on the show as well.
I think reading books is really a great way to build knowledge. Definitely. But also listen to all of our podcasts of all of our old shows. Have you done that?
No.
That can be your one of your sub goals. Yeah, for the year is, well, I find, smart goals, right? Measurable, attainable goals is like baby steps of things that can achieve your larger goals. So maybe for someone like you, it's like, well, what can I do to build my knowledge? And a couple of ideas, listen to our podcast, seriously, and other podcasts too, not just ours, but and read some great books. And I definitely have some that I can pass on to you. I know I gave you a book last month, and maybe after you've read that one, you can, I was telling you about another book today too, that's a must read. And, I'm happy to give you book assignments and then you can report back to us. And then, hey, do some book reviews on the show.
I'll do some book reports.
But also don't lock yourself in your bedroom for a month listening to podcasts and reading books. You got to, build that community.
Totally.
Got to be balanced.
All right. Yeah. So I think that sounds like we're all, set up for a great new year. And I'm really excited because I've heard there's a lot of exciting activism being proposed to happen this year. So I'm really excited for the 2015. I think it's going to be a great year for activists.
Maine and Hastings, every second Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. We talk about violence against women, animal rights, local poetry, homelessness, and other downtown Eastside issues. Don Larson covers the news and interviews, and his sidekick, Mark Bignell, spins local indie music. Maine and Hastings is well-aged, 30 years. It puts the O in organic, original, and radio. Maine and Hastings on Vancouver Co-op Radio, every second Monday at 4 p.m., broadcasting from the old heart of the city.
So you're listening to 100.5 FM CFRO Animal Voices, Vancouver, on the down south east side, unceded Coast Salish territories. Sorry, I said that kind of backwards, but it all worked out. What's coming up in our area in the next couple months? So of course the regular Brooklyn clothing fur demos. Join the Vancouver Animal Defense League's campaign, asking, or rather telling, Brooklyn Clothing to go fur free. This high-end men's clothing store sells the fur trim of trapped coyotes who were profoundly abused and killed. This demo takes place every Saturday from 12 to 1 p.m. Everyone meets at Blends ahead of time at 508 Davie, and then they walk as a group down to Brooklyn Clothing. Check out Vancouver Animal Defense League on Facebook for more info. And this weekend, as we briefly mentioned earlier, is the very powerful and exciting new campaign by Direct Action Everywhere. On the weekend of January 10th, so that is tomorrow, activists across the world will head to places where animal bodies are being mutilated, sold, and consumed, and put that mission into action. This will be the biggest and most important day of action yet. They will go far out of their way to find an important role for everyone, new activist or veteran, shy or outspoken, so everyone is welcome. And this will take place, like I said, tomorrow, January 10th at 2:30 p.m., and for more information on where to meet, check out the Facebook event, Until Every Animal is Free, DXC Day of Action Vancouver on Facebook. And I think we all know, hopefully we've all got tickets for this.
I got my tickets. I already know what you're talking about. I'm so excited.
So it's a masquerade. This is going to be amazing. I actually just ordered a masquerade mask, and I'm pretty excited about it. So this is Vancouver Vegan Prom 2015 for anyone that hasn't been before. It's on February 28th, 2015, and this is just a little section from the page. It's saying, bring your most suave and dashing self to the masquerade. And if you have dance partners in mind, bring them too. Beauties, beasts, counts, and countesses, and everyone in between. We want you on our dance cards at the prom. You can look forward to delicious vegan snacks with a few scrumptious surprises up their sleeves, they say. Fantastic raffle prizes, including most loved vegan goodies and those sure to become future favorites. And it'll be another great evening of music to get you shimmying, shaking, twisting, jiving, and generally strutting your stuff. So that sounds pretty exciting. Amir or Allison, are you coming to this? Oh, I guess she's not listening right now.
I'm going, and yeah. I'm so excited because last year didn't happen. The year before, it was when I was first introduced to coconut bacon.
Oh my God,
kind of changed my life.
I know, it was so good.
And the food was so amazing, and it was just such a fun night. And so I have to get a mask because I'm really excited about this masquerade theme. And yeah, I think it's going to be just a great event. It's fun to get together and to just eat good food and to dance and to have a good time, because sometimes when us activists get together, the demos are fun and we usually meet up after, but it can, you know, it's nice to let go and
it's good to have the balance and have the fun with the fury. Mm-hmm. Also to Animal Voices, we'll be teaming up with Drishti Point yet again this year, for those of you that have been to our previous events, around Valentine's Day, just kind of celebrating the love and action. We don't have a lot of information about all the events, but I know that I and a few other people from Animal Voices and Drishti Point are putting together a bake sale on the 12th, and that's taking place at Unity Yoga Tea House. There's some information. There is a Facebook page. I think the Facebook page is just called Valentine's Day Bake Sale, so just look it up. It'll be hosted by Animal Voices, so you can also look it up under our Facebook. And we are looking for bakers, so if you are a good baker, please sign up on our Google Doc. We really will appreciate all of your delicious treats. And also there is a film screening. Allison, I think, knew a bit more about this.
Yeah, so we've done a film screening for the last 2 years. And last year, remember, we had it on Valentine's Day. This year, we're having it on Friday the 13th. It's going to be Confessions of an Eco-Terrorist, which if you've seen the film called, what was it called? Just Eco-Terrorist.
I think it's Eco-Terrorist.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a film that it's a documentary about Paul Watson and his life and sort of all the things that he's been doing in his life to act for the animals. The theme of this week that we're holding is called Love in Action, and I think that ties in really well with what the work that he does. So if you've seen Eco-Terrorist, it's not the same film. It's called Confessions of an Eco-Terrorist, which apparently is behind the scenes of Eco-Terrorist, the film. So that should be really interesting. I haven't seen it yet, but I do have it here because I think I was going to give it to you, Cynthia, to take a look at. But yeah, so that's happening on Friday the 13th at the SFU Harbor Center, and you can definitely stay tuned for more details on that. We'll be talking about that in weeks to come.
Yeah, and then also on the Saturday, we're going to have another yoga workshop. So that's a workshop connecting yoga and veganism, kind of like what I was talking before. But this time, it'll also just really talk about activism. So I'm really excited. I'll be teaming up with Farah from Drishti Yoga Radio as well, and we'll be running that workshop. So hopefully you can come out to one, two, or all three of the events. It'll be an awesome weekend.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. And if you have any animal-friendly events you'd like to hear on the show, just contact us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
Well, thank you for that, Jackie. Our first interview today is with Robin Lamont, a woman of many accomplishments. She may be best known in the animal rights world as being an animal suspense novelist. But today she comes to us to speak about another use of the pen, and that is how to write effective letters to the editor on behalf of the animals that will get noticed and make an impact. She wrote an article about this recently for the Ara Hen House online magazine, and today she will be sharing with us some of her tips and techniques for this activism that you can comfortably do from your own home. Hello, Robin, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. And you know what? It's great to talk to you again. It's been a while. For people who don't know, we met at the AR conference in the summer quite by happenstance. We just literally bumped into each other in the food line and had lunch together, right? So, and now here you are on the show. So it's great to connect with you again. Thank you for coming on the show today to speak about effective letter writing techniques for the animals when it comes to writing letters to the editor that will get noticed. One reason I specifically wanted to have you on for this week's show is because the sample letter that you talked about in the recent Our Hen House article ties in perfectly with the next interview on the show today, which is about the impending deer cull in a community here in BC. You spoke up for the deer in your own community also with regards to a deer cull. And tell us, why did you choose to write a letter to the editor about this issue rather than some other form of activism?
Yeah, well, first of all, let me just tell you, it's great to talk to you, and thanks for reaching out. I live in a rural town in New York. And last year, when they had raised bow hunting as the way of managing what they call managing deer, I went to a couple of town board meetings, but there were very few people there except for the town board, and they weren't that interested in hearing what I had to say. So I thought, since our local paper is really good about printing all the letters that they receive, and they have a pretty wide circulation, I decided that I would start a letter-writing campaign and just sort of hammer them with letters every once in a while, because that's the way I could reach the most people.
Yeah, for sure. So you are actually a professional writer. You're an amazing writer, by the way. I was reading some of your writing on your website the other night. What are some tips you can give us about writing an effective letter to the editor that will not only get published but noticed by the newspapers or magazines readers?
Yeah, you know, I look at letter writing as is really almost as if you write an editorial piece for a newspaper. First of all, I think you need to look at the paper that you're writing for and the readership that you're writing for. If you're going to write a letter to the New York Times, you know, you'll have a great impact if it gets published, but the chance that it will get published, it's very, very slim. So I don't do that, but I tend to focus on local papers, smaller papers, because there are issues there that are involve the entire community. And I understand that there is a really divided community up in Vancouver about the deer cull.
Yeah, well, we will be finding more about that after. That's actually a question I'm going to be asking our interviewee. It's crazy how some people, and we were talking about it a bit about this before the show, is some people do support it because they're uneducated and uninformed about the issue. So I really feel like writing a letter to the editor, as you have done and as hopefully other people will do as well, is a way really to get some information out there that perhaps people won't know about. But I'm going to ask you a bit about that in a little bit. But I wanted to ask you about what kind of a tone do you tend to use in your letters? Because I can understand how some, you know, you're really impassioned about some of these issues. For example, you don't want to see deer being killed. It's a horrendous act. That must be something you're angry about. Do you act angry? Do you use swear words in your letter? Is that a way to get published?
Well, I don't use swear words. And I don't think you probably would get printed, a letter printed. If you really go outside what your readership is comfortable with. For me personally, I don't like letters that will start with something like, "Let me get this straight," or "You've got to be kidding me." I think what you want to do is you definitely want to engage your reader, because you want them to hear what you have to say. And if you start out on the attack, very often people will pass the letter by. They don't have to read it. So what you want to do is engage your reader. I don't think it means you have to be really careful, because those of us who advocate for animals, we do get passionate about it. And I think it's okay to be emphatic, but I think you still have to be somewhat respectful. And when I say respectful, I think what I mean is be respectful for the forum that you have. It's kind of an honor to get a letter printed in the newspaper. So I would say kind of respect that and use an emphatic but and maybe passionate tone, but nothing that's going to put people off who don't agree with you right off the bat.
Can you maybe give us an example of a poorly worded letter and then the corrected, well and effective worded letter that would actually be the one that would be published?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, for instance, you know, I'm thinking about the deer management. And, you know, for me, as a person and as an animal advocate, you know, my feeling would be to come out and say something like, how can you kill these beautiful creatures? Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of tends to go on the attack a little bit, or comes across as being very critical of whoever is trying to advocate for managing these deer. But you might say something that engages the reader. For instance, you know, we all enjoy the sight of these beautiful animals, and no one wants to see them suffer. But that's exactly what is happening with bow hunting or with the deer cull. I know that some places advocate or are engaged in this capture and euthanize program. Well, you know, the Forest Service and all these people, they use terrific euphemisms, but it's time you can correct people, and you can say things like, you know, when they talk about euthanize, they're talking about a captive bolt to the head. This is what happened. You can tell people what is really going on. But you can not attack them with it.
You know, I really like letters that raise excellent and thought-provoking points that can't be argued with. Like what you just said is like giving people some facts and perhaps that they didn't know about before. One example that I'd liked in the letter you had written about is that you said that you point out that if deer hunters are having to spend 36 hours waiting to see a deer, then perhaps the deer problem isn't quite what the administrators make it out to be. I found that to be really engaging and powerful, because probably a lot of people who are reading the newspaper don't know about that. So would you say that you try to fit in pieces of information like that are going to be thought-provoking and people are really going to notice and think about?
Oh, for sure. And I think a lot of it is bringing to people's attention common sense things just like that. And for me, when in my letters, in advocating against bow hunting and saying how cruel it is, believe it or not, I've found the best research in bow hunting magazines themselves and bow hunting articles.
Nice.
For instance, one bow hunting magazine says, well, they tell the hunters, don't approach the animal after you've shot the deer for 35 minutes. Well, point that you can point that out. What does that mean? It means that the hunters know they're not killing the deer outright. They're only wounding the deer and waiting for the animal to bleed out. I read in another piece that, you know, a bow hunting magazine article that says, a good bow hunter will learn to shoot from his tree stand. Well, I found out that in our county, the only test you had to pass to be a bow hunter was a simple marksmanship, you know, into a stationary target. So I then challenged and said, look, you know, even the bow hunter magazines are saying that it's difficult when you're shooting from a tree stand. And our hunters don't even have to do that, and they're shooting at moving targets. So for me, that was very interesting to actually go to the the hunting magazine articles themselves, and you can pull out little things like that that show people that it's not, as I said in one letter, it's not a Robin Hood fantasy. And I think a lot of people do perceive deer hunting like that. Oh, these amazing shooters go out and one shot and the deer is immediately put out of his misery. Well, that's not the case. And when you're writing letters to the editor and you're trying to reach a lot of people, I think it's really helpful to change their perception, to challenge their perception. And most people don't know that the animals suffer.
I'm exactly on the same page with you there, and that's I actually wrote a letter to the editor once that got published in the Vancouver Sun about an animal rights issue. I was trying to remember for the life of me the other day what it was about, and it was a long time ago, but I remember thinking when I was reading the article on the bus on the way to class in the morning, thinking like, oh, but they need to know about this and this and this. And I crafted this really short letter in my mind on the bus. And as soon as I got to class, I typed it and I sent it to the editor. And they phoned me about, I don't know, like a half hour later to verify I was a real person. And then it got printed. And I guess I was really just impassioned. And I felt like, I guess maybe a tip can be is don't assume someone else is going to do it. Because if you have some good ideas, do it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, a group of advocates can get together and do a letter writing campaign.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of papers, if they get more than one letter or a whole bunch of letters on the same topic, they feel much more obligated to print at least one of those letters. So you get a really good chance of getting the information out there.
Well, that is all the time we have for this for today. Thank you so much for that, Robin, for coming on the show today to speak about effective letter writing techniques for the animals. And if you'd like to read Robin's recent article about this on our hen house, you can find it posted on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, on our website, animalvoices.org, or you can go to ourhenhouse.org and find it there. Just type in Robin Lamont and you'll see it. It was just published a week or two ago. Thanks so much, Robin, for the work that you're doing. And we hope to have you on the show again sometime soon to talk about some of your other activism. Thanks so much and have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio on unceded Coast Salish territories. So now into the news. This week, a California ban on foie gras has been overturned. So early this week, a district court judge in Los Angeles overturned the California law. U.S. District Judge Stephen V. Wilson permanently blocked the state attorney general from enforcing the foie gras ban that took place in 2012. And so basically what he's saying is that it is a federal law, not a state law. So the main question was whether the state was imposing its ban on an ingredient or a process. The judge rejected the state's argument that the law was aimed at barring products created by a particular process. The judge's decision was that process of force feeding is an ingredient and thus falls under federal, not state law. So that's a huge disappointment because in the last few years, foie gras has been banned in California. So for those who don't know what foie gras is, it literally means fatty liver in French, and it is comes from ducks. So workers ram pipes down male ducks' or geese's throats 2 or 3 times daily and pump as much as 4 pounds of grain and fat into the animal's stomachs, causing their livers to swell up 10 times their normal size. Many birds have difficulty standing because of their engorged livers, and they may tear out their own feathers and cannibalize each other out of stress. So it's a horrific process just for what people call a delicacy. So hopefully that will once again go into action if more activists out there. I know a lot of people are working on it, so hopefully something will change with that, but that's really disappointing to hear.
I just wanted to say too that foie gras is actually an issue that we haven't covered on the show yet, and it's really been on my mind for the last couple of years. I think now's the time to really get that out there on the airwaves to really let people know more about it, because obviously there's this disastrous thing that's happening right now, and people need to know. That's the first step to progress. I think it's just becoming aware of what the issues entail.
Yeah, definitely. And so we were talking about the action that's happening this Saturday in Vancouver, the Direct Action Everywhere protest demo. And so actually earlier this week, DXE released their video of an undercover investigation at a Whole Foods certified humane facility. The undercover video was taken by activists who climbed over barbed wire fences into Petaluma Farms. Petaluma Farms produces certified organic eggs for Whole Foods under its 365 label, as well as for Organic Valley. The undercover video shows hens suffering in misery and sickness and death. The birds are crammed into sheds, obviously distressed, suffering respiratory disease, and stuck in their own feces. The investigation also includes an open rescue. In the video, they rescue, we meet a very sick bird who they name Miha and watch as they save her. And so you get to watch her story and what they uncover at this Whole Foods certified facility. So the video we posted on our Animal Voices Facebook page. So you can check it out and share it widely with your friends so people can see the truth behind this humane washing.
And I also wanted to just state that police have just been, or earlier, had been contacted in California about the open rescue. So the best way to show support at this time is just to widely share that video and just show your support for the activists' action.
And speaking of learning more about what humane washing is, we did an excellent interview a few months ago with Hope Bohanic, who wrote a book all about this called The Ultimate Betrayal. Check out our book, but also check out the interview as well if you wanted to look at that. Animalvoices.org. It was a couple months ago, and you can look up her name, Hope Bohanic.
Yeah, and come out to the demo this Saturday.
Well, thank you for the news. Our feature interview today is with Kelly Carson. She is the spokesperson for the grassroots group Deer Safe Victoria, as well as a director of the BC Deer Protection Society. Deer Safe Victoria was formed in January 2012 to take a political stance against the proposition of a deer cull being considered by the Capital Regional District of Greater Victoria. They say that through research, dedication, and passion, they have been able to create an informed and educated counter-perspective to the anecdotal understanding of the deer issue that has arisen in the community. And their goal is to inform the public and the CRD of non-lethal means of deer cohabitation. If you've been watching the local news lately, you'll know that Oak Bay is set to commence a deer cull of 25 deer this month as part of their deer management strategy. Kelly is here today to speak with us about this issue and the different facets that it entails. Hello, Kelly, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, Allison. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for coming on the show today. And as far as I know, what has culminated into a decision by the CRD to kill these deer very soon this month started out via complaints of the deer being present in the urban areas of the Oak Bay community and causing problems there. Can you start by speaking about that and what the presence of the deer is like in Oak Bay?
Well, given that there's been exponential development in Oak Bay and surrounding municipalities, I'm not surprised that there are more sightings. So this is being perceived as an overpopulation. There's never been a scientific deer count in Oak Bay or any other municipality. So Oak Bay did conduct a count in April. It was over 5 days. There were two people in three cars driving at 25 miles per hour over two-hour periods during those days. And I can tell you, I can read from you the count methodology that they used. Teams will be directed to only count the deer that are seen in the forward 180 degrees of their field of vision so that deer are not counted twice.
So what are the problems of coexisting with a deer that have come up for the residents of the area? One problem I'm hearing about on the news is that they eat people's flowers. Is there anything that goes beyond that? And there's also been attacks, too, on, I know there was an attack on a dog last year.
Right. Well, flowers are very definitely the impetus for this cull. The CRD and Oak Bay have tried to downplay that by bringing in other issues. But the fact remains that culling is happening on southern Vancouver Island because people are annoyed that their gardens are being eaten. Now, Oak Bay, on their website, has made a statement, and I'll read that to you. They're saying deer fatalities on our streets and in our neighborhoods are on the rise. accidents with vehicles, intimidation of residents, attacks on pets, damage to food and ornamental gardens, and the potential spread of Lyme disease are growing public safety concerns. Now, all of these arguments to kill these animals have been used in other municipalities. They haven't been a problem on Vancouver Island of any consequence for years. So why now? Why are they now using these excuses to kill our deer? We just don't understand this, and we don't believe it.
And I keep hearing the term overpopulation, you know, as any justification for a call, and especially when it comes to this issue in Oak Bay. I'm curious to know what defines whether an area is overpopulated with a certain species or not, and what have the local decision makers done to determine that there is an overpopulation of deer in Oak Bay?
Well, as I said, there was the deer count in April. Otherwise, they've relied completely on anecdotal evidence and letters that are written in by residents. There is no proof of an overpopulation. If they want to do this right, the first thing they need to do is a scientific deer count, which would include collaring and tracking their movements between municipalities, and that they have no interest in that.
So it seems that there is a lack of knowledge of the deer population, and perhaps I don't think that's a reason to, not that that's a reason to jump into a call, but what are some of the other reasons that you oppose the call?
That we oppose the call?
Yes.
Oh.
Now's your chance. Now here's your platform.
I would say, number one, this is the cruelest thing they could possibly come up with. There have been no attempts to mitigate human-deer conflict of any consequence. Some deer signs were erected on Oak Bay streets in November. I've heard that they have since come down. They refused to consider lowering speed limits within the city limits. So there's been no real attempt to try anything other than a cull. And the method that they're going to use is absolutely horrific. This is a clover trap bolt gun kill, where they're going to bait these traps. They have to bait an area for a few days first to get the deer used to coming into the area. The trap is it's 4 feet by 8 feet, 4 feet tall. It's a metal frame with netting on it. When the deer go into it, it slams shut behind them, and they're left in there for hours. So in the morning, when men come to dispatch the deer, it takes two people to collapse this trap onto the deer, pin it down with their body weight, and attempt to hit it on the head with a bolt gun, which is used in abattoirs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a horrific method that they've chosen. Now, the reason it was chosen is because guns and arrows can't be discharged within city limits. So someone in Helena, Montana, developed this method to kill urban deer without using these guns or arrows.
You know, I see that this is it's a really awful way. I mean, when people say that they are maybe for the deer call, I think they're just thinking of, let's just get those deer out, but they're not thinking of what really goes on. And just from seeing the photos on your website, I didn't even see video or anything, I don't want to, but just seeing the photos on your website of the different steps involved in the process, like, that's horrible enough. I just don't understand how that can be seen as a measure to take. I know that another reason to oppose the call, and I've learned about this before, it's called the compensatory rebound effect. Can you talk about that? Of do calls really work?
That's right. The calls don't work because once you've removed animals in large numbers, you've opened up a food source, so other animals will move in. Another result of mass killing animals is that they will step up their efforts to procreate. So deer have been known to have their young at 1 year of age. They have triplets. They they procreate much more diligently. But it's because nature abhors a vacuum.
Right. So can you talk about the past calls in BC that have happened, and what have the outcomes been with these other deer urban calls?
Right. So in the Kootenays, four municipalities have conducted urban deer calls using the clover trap bolt guns method over the last 2 years since 2012. Cranbrook started with their kill of 50. The traps, which were built by the ministry, by the way, were sent on to Kimberley, where they killed 100. And by the time the traps arrived in Invermere, residents had become aware of what was happening and took their council to court and got an injunction against the trapping. So Invermere succeeded in killing 12 deer, and they had to stop. At that time, for almost 2 years, the process was halted. Pardon me. The process was halted while all the communities had their eye on this court process. The judge dismissed the case based on a process that Invermere used. The judge felt that it had been transparent and dismissed the case. So within weeks of that happening, Cranbrook conducted a secret cull. They had in-camera meetings, and the traps came to town with no announcement. And they were discovered by residents who saw them in the area. So that was made very public by the BC Deer Protection Society, and they ceased to cull. A counselor with Cranbrook wrote an open letter to residents to apologize for the secrecy of the process. And then in February 2014, in Elkford decided to cull, and when the traps came to town, residents just mobilized and created their own grassroots group, and it was a mess in Elkford because the contractor decided that he would trap the deer during daylight hours. He felt that it would be more humane. But unfortunately, it wasn't humane to the rest of the municipality. Residents were seeing the traps around town and were very upset. They were letting deer out of the traps. And then one day, an 8-year-old boy witnessed a buck being loaded into the back of the truck who'd been bolt-gunned. Mm-hmm. So again, the BC Deer Protection Society made this very, very public, and their cull was shut down. The ministry did send an investigator to Elkford to investigate the contractor. They never did interview any of the witnesses, but the culling started a week later. The traps were in town for 2 days, and they were packed up and sent out of town. I think the residents continued to rail against this, and Elkford gave up on their cull.
Wow. So since the process started within the CRD 4 years ago to employ a deer management strategy for Oak Bay, what has the consultation like been with the public or with external knowledgeable sources to seek out methods that perhaps might be favorable to the deer and the human residents? Seems like it's not going to be a positive response there, but what kind of public consultation has there been?
Well, ever since the CRD process with the Regional Deer Management Strategy, there has been no more talk about any other methods. The CRD has their terms of reference set up, and all the municipalities can do now is follow their report. And there was at that time absolutely no meaningful research into anything other than the cull. You may know that during the Citizens Advisory Group process, two members quit. They were frustrated with the lack of any meaningful research. You may not know that in Elkford, during their deer committee process, a member quit because he was frustrated with the fact that there was no meaningful research into anything but lethal management. So this has been very common throughout the province. And the municipalities are claiming that they are left with no other choice, that this is the only remedy that the Ministry of Forest Lands and Natural Resource Operations has given them. And I tend to believe them on that because we know that after reading the BC Ungulate Conflict Report that was sent out in 2011, we know that in that document as well, there was no meaningful research into wildlife corridors or fencing or public education.
Well, that doesn't say to me that there are no alternative methods. All that says to me is that they didn't look into alternative methods. So, you know, it would seem to me that killing would always be the last option. Can you speak about some of the alternative methods that have been used in other communities to manage urban deer populations?
Well, the United States has been using several methods for many years that have been successful. There's an immunocontraception called PZP that has been successful in managing deer, wild horses, even elephants in Africa, where there's a proven overpopulation. It's one shot, and the doe won't conceive for 6 to 7 years. So that's an option for, say, southern Vancouver Island, where there's nowhere else the deer can go. It might not be an option for other communities, such as in the Kootenays, where they experience black-tail and white-tail deer migrating through their communities. In those cases, there's hazing with dogs, which is used successfully in Waterton National Park in Alberta. The federal government uses dogs to dissuade the deer. It's not. It's called a frightening technique, but these dogs are very professional. And there's no, I've seen them work. They simply suggest to the deer that they don't want to be in that area. And when it's done repeatedly, the deer will stop trying to enter the areas you don't want them in. For car and deer collisions, we know that fencing works in Banff. There's miles and miles of wildlife fencing along their highways. There are wildlife corridors. There's so much that can be done to coexist with these deer. And you're right. Killing them should be the absolutely last resort with all the other options that are out there. So we're very upset on Vancouver Island that it's actually become the first chosen way to deal with the deer.
Well, I know Deer Safe Victoria held a public rally in Oak Bay last weekend, and it received a lot of local press. What has the response been like from the community on this issue since you've been getting the word out via the media to the public?
Well, we've been getting a lot of messages from our website, people wanting to join our group and get on our mailing list. Most of the messages we've been receiving have been very positive. It always amazes me at how many people don't know anything about this issue, don't know that it's happening. In fact, during our rally, a woman approached me and said she had no idea this was going on, and she lives in Oak Bay. So it's been difficult to get this out to the public over the last 3 years, but we'll keep working at that and empower people to either raise their voices or write to the ministry, inform themselves about the issue.
And would you say there has been then a lack of transparency from the municipality towards the public in communicating about this issue?
Well, I will hand it to Oak Bay when they have meetings. They do allow speakers to come to the mic for 3 minutes. But that's all we have is the 3 minutes, and we've seen dozens upon dozens of residents speak to the Oak Bay Council, and we just feel like that we're all shouting into a void. We're simply dismissed. We've never been invited to any of this process, and it's been a frustrating experience.
Well, despite your efforts to engage with the CRD, it's been reported that they will be going forth with the call anyways, and I've heard it could be starting as early as this week. First of all, do you know about that? Is it happening yet?
I've heard that as well, yeah. But of course they won't be transparent.
They do it at night, right? Well, as far as I know, part of the process is that the capturing is done at night and then the killing is done early in the morning, so just so that people in the community don't see it, which seems just really crazy.
Yes, that's the terms
of
the permit.
Okay. Okay. So what can advocates do for the deer at this point? Is there anything that we can do?
Well, we can continue to appeal to the levels of government, but now that the call is upon us, I just ask that people be diligent and keep their eyes open for these traps, because you don't want children near these things. You don't want your neighbors to hear these animals in the traps. So we just need to be diligent and know where they are so that residents can make informed decisions about keeping their families away from that area, because there will be neighbors will not be advised when these traps go up next door. They won't be asked permission. They're just going to appear.
And they might not even know what they are, because you wouldn't know what one of those traps were specifically if you weren't
informed about it. No, but you would sure notice. Yeah. No, you would sure notice them, though. They are not small.
They're big. They're
and big. You'll never have seen anything like it before.
a curious individual might say, what is that? And they might step into it. Well, I know you've said that this isn't just an Oak Bay issue, but that you hope that other communities will follow suit. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Recently, in the media, the new mayor of Victoria, Lisa Helps, and the new mayor of Saanich, Richard Atwell, have both said that they'll be keeping an eye on the Oak Bay cull, and if it's successful, they will consider it for their municipalities. So we feel a little bit like there's a machine rolling over us, and we aren't permitted to stop it.
But
it's a very stressful time around here.
I think definitely, though, the work that you are doing, it is setting a precedent for what is going to happen for future proposed culls. So, you know, I do think it's really important that what you're doing, it's getting it out there, right? Because if it wasn't for your group, Deer Safe, what would be happening? These culls would just be continuing without further thought. So I really
it would
do
have happened last year.
Yeah.
So I should let you know too, Allison, that all I'm really doing, I'm not doing anything different that the grassroots groups and the Kootenays didn't do. They did everything in their power to advise all the residents around them that these traps were in town. And the result is so predictable. Neighbor against neighbor, friendships that are destroyed for good. These traps are so divisive. This whole issue has become very divisive, and it's been acknowledged by at least one Oak Bay councillor.
Right. And to me personally, what I think is maybe to fix that divide is to really get people educated, because I don't think anyone really wants to see these animals die in this way for nothing. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yes, most
really
people don't,
it?
Allison.
Yeah, I know.
When I talk to people on the street, I've been doing this for almost 3 years, handing out my pamphlet, those pictures from the website, and people think that this is going to be humane. So when they see the actual process, I don't even have to say anything to them. They just see that this isn't going to be humane.
Right.
So there's a little bit of a media spin on this, that we're dealing with aggressive animals that are going to pounce on our children, but don't worry, we'll humanely deal with them. And what we're doing at Deer Safe is we're refuting that claim, both those claims.
Right. Well, thank you, Kelly, for coming on the show today to speak about the impending deer cull in Oak Bay, BC, and for being a voice for the deer. To find out more about this issue and about Deer Safe Victoria, please visit DeerSafeVictoria.com.
Thank you, Allison.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish Territories. Please join us for our next show, which is Friday, January 16th, where we'll be discussing prison abolition and how it connects to animal liberation. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows from our archives or download our podcasts. You can read our show blogs with detailed links, and you can subscribe via iTunes and also learn about upcoming events. Stay in touch via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and or join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We'll be closing the show with a song by Judy Hewitt called Deer Song, which I think is a good song for today since the theme of the show was talking about these deers. And obviously we send them out to all deers who are facing these culls all across the world. And stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
Over the heather, the dewdrops gleam in the sun. Magnificent stag coming out of the trees, cautiously scenting the air. Not far away on this glorious day, there's contrivance to evil. Seen the painting, the monarch of the glen? Well, you can go and kill that monarch, just read up where and when. Oh, what kind of minds are eager to take a life so this kind of entertainment I will never understand. The chase has lasted for hours. He runs and runs for his life over the walls and the rocks and streams, exhaustion now taking its toll. He stumbles and falls in the water, he dies. His soul leaves the river to watch from the skies. Have you ever seen the painting, the monarch of the glen? Well, you can go and kill that monarch, just to read.